Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Digest Show. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione, and with me again in studio here in Franklin Square, New York City, is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. How's it going, Rev?
Happy Thursday, Dan. What's going on?
Well, what's going on today is we're talking about defensive line. That's right, the defensive line. We're starting our position breakdown here on the Draft Digest Show. And, boy, what a position to start out with. I mean, normally we've been doing this for a couple of years now, Rev. Typically we start with quarterbacks. I know you're a big fan of the defensive line class, and this is the perfect year to kind of mix it up a little bit, start out with defense first. I don't think you can make a case. I don't think there's another position, particularly when you combine the ends and the D-tackles. More first-round picks are going to come out of any other spot than this position as a defensive line, probably just defensive ends alone between 4-3 guys, 3-4 guys. It's just a ton of future first-round picks. Two of those future first-round picks will be with us today. Defensive lineman Cameron Hayward out of Ohio State. I say defensive lineman because depending on what scheme he's drafted to, he could play end, he could play D-tackle, as well as his fellow Big Ten brethren, Corey Too Legit to Quit. Corey Legit out of the University of Illinois, the Fighting Illini, kind of came on strong this year, really made a name for himself, and he's starting to look more and more like he's going to be a first-round pick. So definitely two potential first-rounders will be joining us today, Ralph, as we break down these defensive linemen. And not only do you love the defensive linemen, a lot of Big Ten guys here. You're wearing your Iowa shirt today. A lot of Big Ten guys being represented in this position.
Yeah, absolutely, and a lot of big guys. You know, a lot of guys that could be scheme versatile. A lot of guys that you could line up in the five technique. A lot of guys that you could line up as a, you know, a straight-up 4-3 defensive end. So I like the size out there. I like the athleticism. I mean, this is definitely the cream of the crop in terms of the positions that are available out there in this upcoming draft.
And before we go on and any further breaking down these defensive linemen, just want to remind everybody, go to NFLDraftBible.com for all your draft info. Check out the On the Clocks that we've been throwing up there this week. A lot of good stuff in terms of the draft coverage on our On the Clock shows. You know, every week we do them Monday through Thursday at 6:30. So far this week, we did the Chargers with Kevin Acey. We had the New York Giants with corner Terrell Thomas, as well as sideline reporter and former Super Bowl champ Howard Cross. Yesterday, I spoke to Roy Cummings from the Tampa Tribune when we broke down the Tampa Bay Bucks. And later today, Adam Tischer from the Kansas City Star will join us when we talk some Kansas City Chiefs football and put them on the clock at 6:30. So make sure to check out those shows. All right, Rev, let's start with the defensive ends. And I'll throw you my top five first before I give you the full top ten. So we'll do 1 through 5 and 6 to 10, and you can give me a feel of what you like here. I know you're going to disagree with my number one guy because I got Robert Quinn out of UNC, number one. Maybe a little bit riskier than some of the guys taken after him, but I think he's got the most, as Hubie Brown likes to say, upside potential. Not just potential, not just upside, but upside potential. The kid is a phenomenal athlete. That's why a lot of people think he could play outside even more with his hand off the ground. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I just love his pass rush ability. I know he didn't play last year, and that's something that's, hey, it's a fair knock. We talked about him already before. He's got the health issue, but I think that seems to be underway. I think, you know, even though he had the little transgression there that got him suspended this year, I think he is a bright kid. He is a decent kid. I think it was a dumb mistake. So I like him, number one. Number two, I got Daquan Bowers out of Clemson, who seems to be losing a little steam. I mean, he's not going to slip out of the top 10, but we don't hear those number one overall picks anymore when it comes to Bowers. And I was honestly tempted to move him down to 3 because I really like my number 3 guy, J.J. Watt out of Wisconsin. You know, I remember our guy John Sears covering the Big Ten 2 years ago. Early on in September, was like, wow, this kid, this transfer kid out of the MAC, J.J. Watt, looked unbelievable. And, you know, we've had our eye on him since then. And I just love the way this kid plays. I think he's one of the best two-way defensive ends in this draft, can take over games, can get into the backfield, and he's also phenomenal against the run. So he isn't a one-dimensional guy. Another guy who's an all-around guy, big, strong guy, as you mentioned at the top, a lot of big, strong guys here, Cameron Jordan out of Cal. because, you know, he's a guy that's another high riser. Last year we saw Tyson Alualu go at number 10, having a pretty solid rookie year. A lot of people knocked that pick, but I think he outperformed a lot of the people taken after him that people wanted going ahead of him. Cameron Jordan's another Cal D. Could we see two Cal, back-to-back years, Cal defensive ends going in the top 10? And finally rounding off my top five, boomer bust guy. I got Aldon Smith out of Missouri. A lot of people see him more as an outside linebacker, but for today's purposes, we'll leave him as defensive end, you know, just because he's that pass rushing guy. I mean, there's, you know, we'll talk more about these other guys, but there's, as much as this is a strong, deep class, there aren't many pure pass rushers, guys that look like they're 10, 12, 13, 14 type sack players at the next level, even if they reach their potential. I think that's what Smith has. I think Smith's probably a kid I would have loved to have seen go back to school for another year. Obviously, you know, redshirt sophomore, only 2 years, suffered through some injuries last year. So basically, most of his great tape is from his freshman season. So I would have loved to have seen a little more from him. But I think because of that potential, he cracks the top five.
Well, I'm with you on most of these guys, but I have to question putting Quinn at the first spot. I mean, yeah, I get the athleticism. I get the explosiveness. I get that. But, I mean, the guy is only about maybe 265, 270 pounds. And to me, I think he could be a liability versus the run. I've seen him defending the run, and he could be driven out of plays by bigger offensive linemen. So that makes me want to think that I would ideally, you know, line him up as a 3-4 outside linebacker, you know, rather than making him a traditional defensive end. And then, as you mentioned, the guy hasn't played for a year. I haven't seen a lot out of him, not lately. So, I don't know. I wouldn't feel comfortable making him my number one guy.
Let me just ask you about that, Rev. How about the fact that we've seen guys like going back to Antonio Cromartie with the Chargers, you know, last year Rob Gronkowski, Sam Bradford. We've seen a lot of guys miss a full year and still come back. And it's not like he's coming off an injury where you're wondering that. Doesn't that a little bit, you know, curtail your concern a little bit at all with him missing the full season?
Yeah, but I don't think he has the size to play to be a starting guy at the defensive end position, especially at the 4-3. I would ideally see him as an outside linebacker in the 3-4.
All right, he's still bigger than, you know, let's say a Dwight Freeney, a guy like that. You know, we're talking about a guy who's a pure speed rusher off the edge, you know, John Abraham type, a Dwight Freeney type, those types of guys. You know, there's not too many guys that can get you 12, 13 sacks.
I get you. I'm not denying that this guy's not a talented guy. I'm not saying he can't be a guy that can get you 12 sacks a season. But I just need to see more out of him against the running game. It's not just about rushing the passer and getting sacks. You know, there's some other things you have to do as a defensive end to be a quality, reliable star player.
All right, so who do you like? Who'd you put at number one then?
I would put Bowers at number one. I'm still sticking with Bowers. You know, I mean, a lot of people like to call him a one-year wonder, and, you know, and that's fine. But this guy is prototypical size. And to me, I look at a guy who's stout at the point of attack. He's an explosive tackler, makes plays in the backfield, and he clogs up passing lanes. And the thing that really jumps out to me about Daquan Bowers is the fact that he is so big, but I see him, like, diving for plays, throwing his body around, like, you know, you just don't see that out of guys his size. The way he just he's so agile, he's so quick to dive into plays. He had 15 and a half sacks last year. I think he's on the ascent right now. Maybe he was a little bit of a slow starter, a little bit of a late bloomer, but I think this guy he's on the rise. He's extremely motivated. He's a good kid off the field. And I would be much more comfortable making him my number one guy rather than Mr. Quinn.
How about the injury concerns with Bowers there? Because he does have that question mark as well, to be fair.
Yeah, I agree. And he does have a slight tear in his meniscus. And he did play through that injury throughout the season for what we're hearing. But he's going to have to prove himself. You know, he's got his own little personal pro day coming up. I believe it's on April 1st.
That's correct.
So, you know, that's really going to tell the tale about Daquan Bowers, I think, as far as how high he's going to go. And if everything checks out, then I think he's a legitimate number one guy.
All right, I got a feeling you like my 3 and 4s a lot. J.J. Watt, Cameron Jordan, Wisconsin player, and the kid out of Cal.
Yeah, and you know, with J.J. Watt, I mean, a lot of times, you know, you can listen to analysts, but, you know, you really have to talk to players to really find out, you know, what type of disruptive players these guys are. And, you know, I spoke to the former Minnesota quarterback, Adam Weber, a couple of weeks ago, and he told me, bar none, hands down, J.J. Watt was the guy that gave him the most problems. He was just so consistent, his motor never stopped. So, I mean, if that's not a ringing endorsement, I don't know what is. And, you know,
the battle for the axe, I think, right? Minnesota, Wisconsin.
You think he was a little bit more motivated in that game? Yeah. And, you know, Cameron Jordan, another guy, a great two-way player, tremendous size. And, you know, you talk about size. We're not just talking about height and weight here. Did you ever see that guy's hands? He's got 11 1/4-inch hands, and he uses them very effectively.
He's got catcher's mitts.
Basically, yeah. The one guy, the other guy besides Quinn that I have to debate is Aldon Smith. I don't know if he's a defensive end. I think he's a little raw. The thing that stands out about me about Aldon Smith is he plays a little too upright for me. And I think I could definitely see the pass rushing ability there, but I think I'd feel a little bit safer with him as a 3-4 guy, a 3-4 outside linebacker, rather than being the traditional defensive end.
Well, let me ask you this about Smith. Regardless of where he's playing, do you see him as being a first half of the first round type guy? Is he a top 15 player, or do you think he's more suited to go somewhere in the 20s?
Let's just put it this way. I think he's the type of guy that's going to get picked somewhere in the top 20. I think he's going to, just because of his potential. You know, a lot of coaches out there, you know, we might be talking about him being a boom or bust guy. We might be referencing the fact that he's a little bit raw. But coaches look at it a different way. They see the raw potential there. They want to coach this kid up. They want to bring him in, coach him up, because he has a higher ceiling than a lot of other guys in this draft.
Well, I'll say my opinion. I think Quinn, Bowers, Watt, those are the three surefire guys that have to go in the top 12, 13, 14, 15. I think the next group, which started with Jordan and Aldon Smith, and I'll continue with number 6, Adrian Claiborne, 7, Ryan Kerrigan, and 8, Cameron Hayward out of Ohio State. I think those five guys are very, very close to each other and could go anywhere from 15 to 30 in that back half of the first round. I think those guys are pretty close. I think after Hayward, there's a little bit of a drop-off, and my ninth guy is Jabal Sheard, who I do like a lot, the kid out of Pitt. Really stepped up his senior year. Looked like he was going to be a bad start. He had the off-the-field issues. But then you had Greg Romeus out, and he really stepped up as the main threat on that Pitt defensive line. And then finally, number 10, Alan Bailey, another boomer bust type player, somebody that early in this process looked like a first-round pick. Now that definitely looks unlikely. He's more of a late second-round type player. But I think he's still a lot of athletic ability, a very big kid as well. Flashes sometimes, but you don't see it consistently enough. Maybe he's the type of guy, if you know, you could turn the light on with that kid, maybe you get a steal late second round, early third. What do you think about Claiborne, Kerrigan, Hayward? How do they match up? And I spoke to Hayward, and I was telling him, you know, these guys, you can throw a lot in there out of the Big Ten. I said, you know, it's so tough to rank these guys because there's so much you like about a lot of these players. And, you know, I make up this list and I'm like, wow, how do I have Cameron Hayward 8? He's only my 8th defensive end. I got to move him up higher. But who do I move down? There's nobody there that I want to move down.
You won't move down on Aldon Smith? I mean, you can arguably say that, you know, Cameron Hayward at his best can be just as good, if not better, than a J.J. Watt. I think they're very comparable, you know. Look, when I look at Claiborne, Kerrigan, and Cameron Hayward, they're all, in my opinion, potential difference makers at the next level. But they're all different players. To me, Claiborne is a classic 4-3 guy, has that type of size at about 6'4", 285 pounds, very powerful guy. He's got a nice array of pass rush moves. So I think that guy, if he obviously stays healthy and, you know, his little Herb's palsy condition doesn't prevent him from being the type of player he can be, I think he can be a guy that could put up 10 to 12 sacks. A guy like Kerrigan, he's a little bit smaller than those other guys that you mentioned. He might be about maybe 255 pounds, somewhere in that area. He's in tremendous shape. I could definitely see him being more of a 3-4 outside linebacker. To me, he looks a lot like a guy like Mike Vrabel, who is amazingly still in the league Must be like 37 years old at this point. But, I mean, he could be that type of player, in my opinion. I think he does have the athleticism to drop back on occasion. But, obviously, you know, his forte is rushing the passer. And then with Cameron Hayward, you know, there's nothing fancy about Cameron Hayward. He's basically a bull rushing guy, a guy that you can't push back, amazing strength. But, again, he's a pretty much a no-frills pass rusher. Doesn't have a big array of moves, and that's why I see him ideally as a five technique guy in the 3-4.
Any concerns at all, Ralph, that Claiborne and Hayward, I think, in terms at least statistically, didn't put up the kind of numbers you were looking for out of them as seniors? Clearly, J.J. Watt and Ryan Kerrigan had much better, you know, 2010 seasons in terms of racking up numbers, particularly the sack numbers. Any concern there? Does that make a big difference to you?
No, not particularly. You know, with the Adrian Claiborne, a lot of these teams that were gearing up to go up against Iowa this past season, they were game planning against Adrian Claiborne. And that meant putting two guys up against him, three guys against him. He was the focal point there. And that opened things up for a lot of the other defensive players on that Iowa team. And, you know, with Cameron Hayward, I don't know how healthy he was throughout the season. I mean, you saw him, you know, dominating that last game in the Sugar Bowl, playing basically with one arm. But again, you know, I have to question how healthy he was throughout the season.
And, you know, you can hear our interview later on, at least part of the interview with Cameron Hayward. Spoke to him yesterday, so we're going to throw half of that up here tomorrow. You can check out the player spotlight and listen to it in its entirety. Rev, let's move from defensive end and let's move inside here on this Draft Digest show. You're listening to, I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. With me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. We are talking defensive line. We've just broken down the defensive end. Let's move on to defensive tackle. My guy still at the top. Some people are jumping off the bandwagon. I'm not sure why, is Nick Fairley from Auburn. A close number two is Marcel Darius, very talented kid out of Alabama. Number three, I got Muhammad Wilkerson. And number four, our man Corey Legit, who's coming on. Two guys who I think probably have helped himself as much as any guys on the defensive line in this past season in terms of coming on as potential first-round picks and NFL prospects. And at number five, the big man, Phil Taylor, out of Baylor, formerly a Penn State Nittany Lion. So, Rev, let's start at the top, you know, with the big debate, Fairley versus Darius, a pair of SEC kids. You know, some people out there questioning Fairley's effort. Does he have the motor all the time? Could he be a bust? I mean, I wonder, you know, I wonder how many SEC coaches would question Fairley's effort. I think, you know, from a college football perspective, what we heard more about was, does Fairley play beyond the whistle? Not does he not give a full effort. He, you know, a lot of people wonder, did he cross the line too far? And, you know, some people are calling him a dirty player, which to me, hey, you can debate that, but I think ultimately I can't imagine a defensive line coach not wanting a little, you know, let's not say dirty, but a little nastiness from their interior tackle.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think a lot of, they won't say this, but a lot of coaches out there, a lot of front office people, they love his nasty streak. You know, they want that intimidator out there that's gonna put a little fear into the hearts of those offensive players they go up against. You know, and as far as him not being the guy that gives it his all from down to down, I really don't see that. Now, you know, you can question the fact that he's a one-year wonder. Granted, I'll give you that. But, excuse me, this past season when I saw him play, he was going all out. And he's not your prototypical defensive tackle. I mean, this guy is tall and about 6'5". He's got some long limbs, long arms, which I think really helps him a lot of times create that separation from blockers. He can hold those offensive linemen at bay, and then he's got a lethal first step. So to me, I think I have to agree with you. I think Fairley is the number one guy among all defensive tackles.
Yeah, I mean, I fell in love with this kid early on in the season against Mississippi State. He wasn't even somebody I was necessarily targeting as a key guy in that game, but you just couldn't help but notice him. He was all over the place. He was a difference maker. He made an interception. He's one of those rare defensive tackles that could be your primary pass rusher, which is so rare in the NFL. I mean, there's not that many guys. You know, you could go a couple seasons, I think, without having a defensive tackle get double-digit sacks in the NFL. And if he could be that type of guy at the next level, I think he should be up there in terms of being one of the first one or two guys off the board. But I think, you know, I see Darius as a potential top five guy as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if both of them end up going in the top five. Darius, I think, also is kind of a freaky type athlete, and he showed a lot of that at Alabama. We obviously remember it from his sophomore year when he had that big touchdown before the half against Texas, where he just showed incredible athletic ability. Didn't have the great junior year at Alabama, but a lot of that was, you know, he had an early suspension. Then you also had an injury that he was dealing with. So he really wasn't at 100%. It was kind of a rocky season for him. But I think he's definitely a top five pick, ref.
Yeah, I would say so. I like Fairley a little bit better. Fairley kind of reminds me of Albert Haynesworth in a lot of different ways. But as far as Darius goes, well, to me, he's just he's got a different body type. He's a thicker guy, well over 300 pounds. He's got thick legs. You know, he wasn't always in peak condition this past season. I kind of got the feeling that he wasn't playing hard from down to down. Now, maybe that might have been because he was hurt. I don't know that. But that concerns me a little bit. But when this guy is at his best and when he turns it on, I mean, he could be one of the more dominant defensive tackles out there. He could stack the run, he pushes the pocket, he makes plays in the backfield, and I've even seen him drop back into coverage. So he's the type of guy that can do just about anything you want your defensive tackle to do. I think he's scheme versatile, and I think he's a difference maker, and he's done it on the big stage.
Yeah, he definitely has, and he's learned from somebody who definitely knows a little bit about playing defense, and that's Nick Saban. Rev, how about the back three of my top five? And I'm talking about Muhammad Wilkerson out of Temple, Corey Legit out of Illinois, who will be joining us shortly, and Mr. Phil Taylor out of Baylor. Those three guys, first-round picks, what do you think?
I think so. I think all three of those guys – I like Legit a little bit more than Wilkerson. I think Legit can go a little bit higher than those other two guys that you just mentioned. But, you know, as far as Wilkerson goes, you know, the thing that really impresses me about him is how he gets inside of blockers. And once he grabs a hold of you, you're going down. I think he actually might be the best tackler, pure tackler, out of all these defensive tackles out there. That's what really stands out when I watch him play. And Phil Taylor, he's just a big space eater, but not a typical space eater without range. I mean, this guy could actually move laterally at 340 pounds. So to me, he's a special player. I don't see any other nose tackle out there or potential nose tackle out there that brings the type of athleticism and skills that he brings along with his tremendous size. And as far as Corey Legit goes, very physical guy. He's got explosive burst off the snap, great acceleration through the gaps. I have Legit, as I said, a tiny bit above those other two guys, but I think that you can make a case for all three of them being first-round picks.
You know what I think is really interesting, Rev, when we talk about these players? I mean, most of these defensive ends, you know, Quinn obviously didn't play last year at all, so he was a known commodity. I mean, Bowers, Watt, Jordan, Aldon Smith, Claiborne, Kerrigan, Hayward, all these guys had really big 2009 seasons. We knew who all these players were heading into 2010. You know, maybe the order has shuffled a little bit from the preseason, but most of those guys were in most people's top tens. But at the start of 2010, I don't think many people had Fairley, Wilkerson, Legit, Taylor as first round guys. So it's interesting to me how to, you know, Darius was somebody everybody knew was going to be a really talented kid. And, you know, if he had a good year, had a good chance of coming out and being a high pick. But those other four really weren't household names heading into the season in terms of being, you know, first round type draft picks.
Well, let's not forget, you're talking about very young men. And a lot of times these players in their first 1 or 2 years in college, they don't know how to prepare. They don't know how to stay in shape. And then finally the light goes on. And then they decide, hey, you know what, maybe I'll be a little bit quicker if I drop 20 pounds. You know, so I don't buy the argument with some of these guys being one-year wonders, you know, because they are so young and they are still learning things about, you know, how to be the best player they can be, how to stay in shape and, you know, how to condition themselves, how to eat right and all those things. So, you know, I mean, I would take each player case by case on an individual basis as far as, you know, just lumping all these guys in as, you know, one-year wonders.
Yeah, fair enough. And I believe Mrs. Moglione is wondering when the light's going to turn on for me that I should drop a 20 pounds or so. That light hasn't turned on just yet. All right. The next two guys are guys. that were projected in most people's first rounds. And number six, I have my man Stephen Pia out of Oregon State, who obviously had that late injury blow that's kind of hurt him in this offseason. And then Marvin Austin, number seven, out of North Carolina. And, Rev, this is what I think. I think, you know, Marvin Austin is, you know, I wouldn't say he's in the fairly Darius class, but I think he's every bit as talented as that next group. And his, you know, just on pure ability, you can warrant him being the number three defensive end. You can warrant him being a top 15 pick. But we really haven't seen it on the field consistently down in, down out. And in my opinion, out of all the UNC guys, I think he might have been hurt the most by not playing last year, because I think he had the biggest, you know, potential in terms of increasing his stock. He could have been that Nick Fairley and have a beast of a season with 10, 11 sacks from defensive tackle position, leading a North Carolina defense with Robert Quinn and Carter and Quan Sturtevant and all those guys. I mean, they could have been Auburn and had that type of year, and he could have been the linchpin to that defense, maybe all the way to a championship the way Auburn went. But, you know, like I said, I've never seen him play consistently like a first-round pick. We hoped he would do that in 2010. He didn't get a chance to do that. So what do you think about those two guys, Stephen Pia out of Oregon State and Marvin Austin out of UNC?
Well, Stephen Pia, I mean, I don't have any problems with him in terms of size and ability. I don't put him, you know, in the upper echelon among defensive tackles, because – and I don't see him having that ability to disengage from blockers like I do with some of the other guys out there, you know, a guy like Nick Fairley, for instance. But as far as Marvin Austin goes, now, here's a guy I believe who has legitimate first-round talent, and a guy that you could probably get in the second or third round. So to me, he's one of the big sleepers in this draft, in my opinion. You take a look at him play when he's at his best and when he's motivated. He is a guy that's got tremendous range. He is very agile, and a guy who's a legitimate 300-pound guy. You just don't find guys like that walking down the street. Problem is that he takes a lot of plays off. And so he needs to really prove that he takes football seriously and that he's going to stay motivated for an entire season. If he can do that, I think the guy is definitely going to be a second-round pick. But if guys or if NFL people continue having questions about him, he could fall all the way down in the third round.
And he's the type of guy that, you know, I think he'll go in the second round, because you're going to have a coach that's going to say, hey, I'm going to turn this kid's light on, and he's going to be a Pro Bowler for me, because he's got that kind of ability. Rounding off my top 10, I think we, once again, you know, I think the top five, you had five first-round type guys. I think you have two legitimate second-round guys. Then I think you have a little bit of a drop-off after those two guys to round out my top 10. I got Drake Nevis out of LSU at number 8, Jarvis Jenkins out of Clemson, number 9, who we're going to be speaking to next week, and Terrell McClain, the kid out of USF who had his pro day today in Florida, number 10. And, you know, there's definitely about three or four other guys that could be in the conversation with this group. What do you think of that trio?
Well, I can't argue. I mean, I like all three players. You know, Jenkins is the guy that brings the most in terms of size. The problem I have with Jenkins a lot of times is he plays a little bit too upright. He needs to stay a little bit lower. But I think that the guy has tremendous ability. He's got good quickness for a man his size. And he's versatile in that if he packs on another 10 or 15 pounds, he could play nose tackle as well. He's got that type of ability. Not a pass rusher, more of a guy that's going to hold a fort and be the type of space eater and clodder that you're looking for. Nevis, on the other hand, Drake Nevis out of LSU, is a guy that I like, but he's a completely different player from Jarvis Jenkins. He's more of a one-gap guy, a quick guy, not as big. Maybe he might be about 6 feet tall, or maybe about 280, 290 pounds, but the kid is quick, and he can shoot those gaps, and he can, you know, he could really strike fear into the heart of a quarterback. I've seen him do that numerous times during his collegiate career. So to me, he would be the ideal 4-3 defensive tackle.
Well, that three technique type guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the disruptive player, get into the backfield.
Yeah, more of a guy like a Warren Sapp type.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the thing with Nevis is it seemed to me that he really – he had a big – he started off the season like gangbusters. Great start. And then maybe, you know, once they got into the SEC schedule, wasn't as effective that second half of his senior year.
Well, that's where the lack of size comes in. And, you know, maybe at the next level, he will need to be a little bit more of a rotational guy, or at least, you know, be on a team that has other players like him that can help him out. And, you know, you don't put too much of a burden on his shoulders.
I think that's where the separation comes with these, eight, nine, ten guys. You know, those first seven, I think, are legit starting, you know, full-time type defensive tackles. I think after that, you start seeing more of the guys who probably be better suited to be in a rotation. Maybe they're, you know, more run-stopping guys, maybe more pass-rushing type players, maybe can't give you as many plays. But I think that that first seven, particularly the top five, I think we're going to see in the first round. You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Show. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. With me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini. As we're breaking down the defensive line, arguably the strongest position for the 2011 draft, particularly that defensive end position, with us today will be, in any moment, hopefully, Corey Legit out of Illinois. He should be calling in pretty soon. After that, we'll hear from Cameron Haywood out of Ohio State, a couple of Big Ten kids who figure to hear their name called early in the 2011 NFL Draft. Also, go to NFLDraftBible.com. Check out those on the clocks because they are on the money. Monday, we had the San Diego Chargers with Joe Everett speaking with Kevin Acey, who covers the Chargers. Tuesday, Bo Marchand, double guests, Terrell Thomas, starting corner for the New York Giants, as well as Howard Cross, sideline reporter for their radio shows. And, you know, for guys our age, remember him as a Super Bowl champ. I believe, Rev, he played more games with the New York Giants than anybody else. All-time games played as a New York Giant, Howard Cross. Yesterday, I spoke with Roy Cummings of the Tampa Tribune, kind of breaking down the Bucs and their season, what direction they'll be headed in. A little sneak peek. Could be better. Maybe not as many wins. That was kind of the ultimate theme with them. And that could be the theme with the Kansas City Chiefs as well, who went 10-6 last year, a pair of teams that overachieved. I'll be doing the on-the-clock show a little later today at 6:30 in just about an hour with Adam Teicher from the Kansas City Star. He's the main man covering the Chiefs in KC, so he'll be joining us to break down some Chiefs football. Rev, a lot of first-round guys here, you know, defensive end position, when you talk about Quinn, Bowers, Watt, Jordan, Smith, Claiborne, Kerrigan, Haywood, I think you got eight guys that have a very, very good chance of going in the first round.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, there are a lot of teams out there that are deficient both in stopping the run and a lot of teams out there. And you take a look, like, at the, you know, the top five of the draft, and you have teams like, you know, the Denver Broncos. I think they were the least effective pass-rushing team, only had 23 sacks on the season. And then you have a team like the Buffalo Bills, and they allowed 200 yards or more rushing in eight of their 16 games. So there's a big need there for defensive linemen at the top end of that draft.
Yeah, I mean, by my account, you know, you go through every team. This may sound kind of wild, but I think there's 27 teams out of the 32 could realistically target a defensive lineman in the first or second round. I think there's that many teams that have this need at that position. Part of it is because teams transitioning, you know what I mean? When you transition either way from the 4-3 to the 3-4 or vice versa, you know, it takes time to fully transition. You don't get, you know, you just don't change defenses in 1 year and fill every hole in that front seven to fit your new scheme. So teams out there, and then there's teams like Denver who just switched recently, you know, back to the 4-3 now that need immediate needs at that defensive line position. I think a couple of teams that pop out that really need a lot at the defensive line position are Carolina, Denver, who I think need both defensive ends and defensive tackles. They could go either direction. You got the Browns and the Jets in terms of two teams that play the 3-4 that could use a defensive end or a nose tackle. And I think even the Saints, you could throw it out there. You know, a team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago struggled in stopping the run, obviously, against the Seahawks in the playoff game. I think they could use help along the line, whether it be inside or outside.
You know, it's funny, you know, how a lot of people are mentioning about the Cleveland Browns, how they desperately need a receiver, and they do. But I think a wide receiver, a quality wide receiver, is somebody you could find also in the later rounds. I think I would, you know, seeing all the type of first-round talent you have at the defensive line position, I would definitely go in that direction if I'm Cleveland. I mean, they need to get younger and deeper. You know, a guy like Robert Smith is 32 years old. He has a bad back. He could retire. And, you know, then our favorite former Jet is another guy, Kenyon Coleman, who's 32 years old, getting up there in years. So they desperately need to revamp that defensive line. And forgot to mention, you know, another guy, Sean Rogers, is no longer with the team as well. So they need some bodies in there.
And how about at the top, Rev? I mean, you know, the first couple of picks there, Carolina, Denver, you mentioned the Bills also a defensive end. I mean, I think with Carolina and Denver, they could both, you know, they could use Quinn, they could use Bowers, they could use Fairley, they could use Darius. I think either team could go in an interesting direction. Do you think we could see defensive line go 1-2, maybe even 1-2-3?
Yeah, I think it's very possible. You know, you talk about Carolina, and there's just an utter lack of size there with that team. They just need bodies. Last year, you know, they just didn't have enough 300-pound guys. I think the only guy that was somewhat effective at defensive tackle was Andre Neblett. He was really the only bright spot at defensive tackle. So, yeah, they desperately need a big body in there. You can make the argument, yeah, that they can go with quarterback as well. But, hey, I wouldn't – if I'm a Carolina fan and they go for a defensive tackle, I won't be complaining. You know, then, you know, you go down the line and, you know, even teams like Chicago, you know, they announced the release of Tommy Harris. Anthony Adams has to be re-signed. It's another team that could use some help at defensive line. And even Green Bay, you know, they might not re-sign Cullen Jenkins. You know, a guy like Justin Harrell gets hurt every year. Mike Neal is another guy they drafted last year. He looks like he could be injury prone. So, you know, even teams that did well last year that are at the lower part of the draft, like Chicago and Green Bay, you know, they can go for a defensive end or a defensive tackle, you know, or whatever their preference is.
And how about our very own New York Jets? I mean, they could go in either direction. I'm sure they're looking at guys like a Phil Taylor, like a Cameron Haywood, like a Muhammad Wilkerson. They would love to see one of those guys drop to the latter portion of the first round. I think they could pluck up either a defensive end or a nose tackle.
Yeah, well, when you take a look at the nose tackle position, they have Chris Jenkins, a guy that just can't stay healthy. So they're going to need a young body in there. Even if Sione Puha is a guy that you can, you know, that could be like that hold the fort type of guy for another year or two, you definitely need to bring in some more depth and some more youth at that position.
Yeah, a lot of teams there that are, you know, going to be needing defensive line help come draft day. You know, we talked a little bit about Carolina and Denver, the Browns. I think, you know, Dallas is another team that could use a defensive end to help them there. You know, Jacksonville, how about, you know, even teams last year that really addressed the defensive line. You know, Jacksonville took Tyson Alualu. Tampa Bay took Gerald McCoy and Brian Price out of UCLA. Those were interior guys, but now they need defensive ends.
Yeah, it's interesting to bring up a team like Jacksonville because last year they brought in a guy like Aaron Kampman who was just dynamite for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, but then he got hurt, so they definitely need some more numbers there.
All right, and speaking of, you know, needing defensive linemen in the first round, that's got to make somebody happy, a guy like Corey Legit here and that type of thing, because he's the type of player that can fill those type of needs. And joining us now is Mr. Corey Legit out of the University of Illinois. Got to love that name. Hey, Corey, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. It is a great opportunity for me. I feel I'm very blessed. And, you know, I just – Hello?
It looks like we have you on the line, Corey. I can't hear you. Corey, can you hear
us? Yes, I can hear you now.
All right, cool. All right, so with us now is Corey Legit, defensive lineman from the University of Illinois, 6'2", just about 300 pounds. Corey, you had 63 tackles, including 12.5 tackles for a loss, 4.5 sacks, and 10 quarterback hurries from the defensive tackle position. Corey, let me start you with the pro day. A lot of rave reviews. Can you talk a little bit about your performance on your pro day?
My performance came from my Coach Gilmore, my trainer Tony Villani, and another trainer Abe Jones. All those guys helped me with my hip flexibility and made sure when I came to pro day I was in shape, well in shape. I was able to flip my hips during my drills, hit the bag, and get the coaches everything they wanted to see, show them that I had no flaws.
And let me ask you, you know, you were worked out there by the local defensive coordinator from the Chicago Bears, Rob Marinelli. What was it like getting worked out by him, NFL defensive coordinator?
It was great, you know, because he's one of the best in the business right now, as everyone is saying and everyone knows. And, I mean, it was just a great experience for him to actually come to my school and work me out there. And so for me to showcase my talent to him, showing that I am a good athlete and I have some dog in me and I'm willing to fight and continue to work to get better.
Hey, Corey, Ralph Mancini here. You know, one of the things that stands out about you is your low center of gravity. You do an excellent job of maintaining leverage. Did your past as a high school wrestler have anything to do with that?
I can say that had a little. Not really. I can't say it had much effect on it. I'll just say my defensive line coaches and the way that we played at University of Illinois, I say that played a big role in my low center of gravity.
Yeah, and talk about how you lost 30 pounds in the off season. You know, prior to this past year, how has that made a big difference in your play during your junior year?
Well, I stopped eating after 6 o'clock. Once I got out of practice or whatever I was doing, I didn't touch anything, maybe an apple or so, just a nice little food or whatnot. And, you know, that helped me drop my weight quick. I went down from 320 to 290. And, I mean, I had my explosiveness, my quickness, my agility. I was able to run down the field, make tackles downfield. Like you've seen against Michigan State, I was just able to fly all around the field, and my endurance was ridiculous.
Yeah, and I'm a Big Ten guy myself, and I had a lot of fun watching you play this past season. But you're a Miami kid. You're from Florida. How did you choose Illinois over teams like LSU, Miami, Florida State? What was the story behind that?
Well, Coach Zook came down to Miami. He sold Illinois football. And when I came here on my official visit, I saw the defensive line position that I was stepping into. So I was quite happy with that, and I was going to be playing. I knew the defensive line, I knew guys was leaving, so I was like, hey, I know for a fact I can come here and play as a true freshman, and that's what I did.
You wanted to be part of the Orange Crush there in Champaign, I think. That's what it was, right, Corey?
Yeah, you definitely know.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, staying in the Big Ten, you know, we heard so much hype about, you know, the Claibornes and the Watts and Cameron Haywood. It was all about the defensive ends. Do you feel that as a defensive tackle, you interior guys got overlooked a little bit in the Big Ten last year?
I respect each one of those guys, those DNs. All of them played. They had a heck of a career at their college. And I believe, yeah, defensive line, we kind of got shoved under the boat a little bit. But it's okay. We're going to continue to ball out in the Big Ten and show everyone why we're the best conference and why defensive tackles are the most important players in the game of football sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you guys play near the ball, occupy a lot of double teams. You guys make the people around you better. But let me ask you, though, which guy kind of impressed you? You know, we've been speaking to some players, different guys around the Big Ten. So which other, you know, from a defensive lineman's perspective, which guy in your conference really stood out to you and impressed you?
As far as offensive lineman or defensive lineman?
No, the defensive lineman.
Well, I'd say definitely Watts. He definitely showed me a lot, and that Ryan Kerrigan, that guy, he had a ridiculous motor. Of course, Claiborne showed out like he always does, and Haywood also. Those guys, you know, those guys are elite players, and they're some of the best in the country, right up there with me. And I mean, I feel that each one of those guys, and there are some guys also that just showcased a lot of talent. And I was just happy with their performance and the way they play for their team.
And how about during this draft process? I know a lot of people you meet. Other players that maybe you didn't know that much about, whether it be, you know, at the combine or where you're working out, you know, were there any guys that you've met that you've kind of gotten to know during this process that have impressed you?
Yes, most definitely. Marcus Gilchrist from Clemson, Brian from Clemson, Raheem Moore from UCLA, Lawrence Gaff from Arizona State, John Moffitt from Wisconsin, and Jimmy Young from TCU, and Ryan Williams from V-Tech, and all those guys, Rashad. All those guys, I mean, each one of those guys impressed me every day with their work ethic and the way they just showcase their talent every day while I was out training in Boca, Florida with Tony Villani.
And we're talking to Corey Legit, defensive tackle from the University of Illinois, projected by many people to be a first-round pick in the upcoming NFL draft, one of the top defensive tackles in the class of 2011.
Hey, Corey, talk about your off season. What would you say was the highlight of your off season? You know, now that you've been training and you've been at the All-Star Games and you trained at the Combine and you had your pro day, and what is it about now you as an athlete? How do you think you've improved now as an athlete after all that training that you've had in the off season?
Obviously, definitely my hip flexibility. Me being able to move my hips in a certain direction the way the coaches want me to. Be able to open them, close them, and be able to just close within 5 to 10 yards, because that's what the defensive line position is all about, being able to close on the quarterback or the ball, wherever it's at. So, I mean, and that's one thing I found in my training that I definitely got a lot better at. I got quicker with getting shortening distance and just covering ground most of all.
And what was your favorite part of the off season? Was it the interviews? Was it the training? What was it?
I would say just the whole combine, the training, the whole combine experience, just everything about it. Just, you know, as growing up as a kid, I used to watch this stuff. Now I'm actually a part of it. So it's just the whole combine experience and training with Tony Villani. Every day that guy pushed us and made sure we gave nothing but our best. So, and that's what all the guys did when we got to the combine, gave it our best, and it showed.
Hey, Corey, 2010 was a big breakout year for you. So let me ask you, what do you think made a big difference? What allowed you to take off as a junior?
Me losing weight and just was more determined in my leadership and things that I wasn't doing as a sophomore. I just stopped doing it. I stopped doing things that I was doing as a sophomore, and I just focused on football and school and myself and family and God. And I mean, I just took that and ran with it. I didn't care about anything else outside of that.
And can you tell us a little bit about your decision to leave Illinois early and not come back for your senior year? What kind of went into that? Why did you choose the NFL?
I chose the NFL because I was very comfortable and happy with what I did at the University of Illinois. I showed the younger guys how to work, and I showed them what it's all about. It's just, you know, being a fighting Illini, most of all, you know, come to practice every day, prepared to work, and give it your best nevertheless. And that's one of our models, and we just always did it. And guys bought into it, and coaches loved us for that. And we showed when we went to Texas and we played against Baylor, and we wanted that bowl game more than anything.
And, Corey, let me ask you, it's been reported that you got a third-round grade from the NFL Advisory Committee. One, is that accurate? And, two, do you kind of feel good that you kind of maybe proven those early evaluators wrong because you're looking more and more like a first-round pick?
Yes, I did get a third round grade from those guys, but at the end of the day, you know, I guess when the coaches went back and watched film, it was like, hey, this guy can really play some football. What are we thinking? So I'm very happy that, you know, I left school and I made kind of the right decision, even though I got a third round grade. It was, you know, it was kind of risky, but at the end of the day, everything is turning out for the good.
Yeah, and Corey, also, you were part of a pretty successful Illinois team this past season. I mean, you weren't a BCS team, but you really improved, and you have a lot of good players. Like, even in this draft now, besides yourself, you have guys like Martez Wilson in this draft. You have Clay Nurse. What could you tell us about those guys?
I mean, those guys are guys I would definitely always love to play with. They work hard. They give you everything they have. They're great people. They are heck of athletes, and you know I love each one of those guys as though if they're my own brothers, and I will always take care of them and love them regardless.
And Corey, let me ask you: have you had or are you gonna have any workouts or visits with any specific teams?
Yes, I have workouts set up with a lot of teams, a ton of teams, but right now I don't feel comfortable discussing which team exactly it is. I'm just happy that those teams are working me out. And yes, I do have a lot of workouts that I have to do with teams.
So you don't want to help a brother out? Let me break a story here.
I can't quite do that right now. I can't do it right now. Sorry about that.
All right. I feel you, Corey. Corey, before I let you go, I got one more question for you. You're a Miami native. Your second home has been Champaign, pretty close to Chicago. So who's going to the Eastern Conference Finals? Is it the Miami Heat or the Chicago Bulls?
Of course, I'm going to take my Heat. I'm going to take the Miami Heat always. You know, I mean, of course, we just down right now. You know, everyone gets down. I was down my first 2 years at Illinois, and, hey, the cream rose to the top at the end. And, I mean, I know the Heat's going to definitely pull it on out. They got a heck of a team down there, a heck of a coaching staff, and the Bulls do also. The Bulls also But, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the best team will definitely rise to the top.
Hey, Corey, I'm a New York and a Knicks fan. I pray one day the Knicks can be down by having LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh and be down like that.
Well, it's definitely. I mean, New York is definitely on their way, too. I mean, you guys got Carmelo and Amari and Billups. I mean, I believe you guys are going to be awesome. The title is definitely coming back to the East.
All right, I hear that. I'm all for that. All right, Corey, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time, and we want to wish you luck on those workouts.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
All right, anytime. Great stuff. Thanks, Corey.
All right,
and that was Corey Legit from the University of Illinois, Fighting Illini. We're going to hear a little bit now from Cameron Haywood, and then we'll come back to you after that. Joining us now in this NFL Draft Bible Player Spotlight is defensive lineman Cameron Haywood out of the University of Ohio State, the Ohio State Buckeyes. At 6 feet 5 inches and 294 pounds, with athletic ability, he's one of the most versatile D linemen in this draft. He had 48 tackles as a senior, 13 tackles for a loss, including 3.5 sacks. Played a big key role in their Sugar Bowl win over Arkansas. You know, before the injury, Cameron, you were all over the field. You were in the backfield constantly harassing one Ryan Mallett. I know he knows who number 97 is. Cameron, thanks for joining us today. How's everything going?
Going great. Thank you for having me.
All right, Cam, let me start here. You know, I pumped you up on the high note with that big game and great bowl win over Arkansas. But I got to ask you, I noticed your stepdad, Corey Blackwell, played at Wisconsin. Is he still giving it to you for the Badgers' win over you guys?
I don't think so, not anymore. You know, he knew I was pretty upset about it, but you know, deep down, he's always going to be a Buckeye.
I hear that. Now, let me ask you, so, you know, as I mentioned, you did get injured in that game. How is the elbow doing now, you know, a couple of months removed? Now, you know, looking back, you've had the opportunity, you know, to do a little at the combine, not everything you wanted to do. You know, you've got visits and workouts and such with teams. You've got your pro day coming up at March 30th. You know, how big of an impact do you think missing the Senior Bowl will have? Or do you think, you know, you really do have enough opportunity to show NFL teams what you can do? Yeah, our senior editor, Ralph Mancini, is a Penn State fan. He tells everybody just look at the Penn State film from 2009 if they want to see how good you can play. What's it been like since the combine in Indianapolis? How many teams have you met with? How many workouts and visits have you had? Talking to Cameron Haywood, defensive lineman from the Ohio State Buckeyes, projected first-round pick in the 2011 NFL Draft, all Big Ten performer. Cameron, as you mentioned, you got a personal workout on the 30th of March in about a week. What should we expect to see that day from you?
I don't know who's going to work out the
we're all looking forward to that, seeing what you can do. Cam, let me ask you, are there any other players going to be there that you know of? And I believe you're out in the West Coast right now to visit with the team. Can you give us a little inside info here? Who are you visiting with? Keeping it close to the vest. I should say keeping it close to the sweater vest, right? Not just the vest, being that you are a Buckeye. Cameron, we're talking to Cameron Hayward here from the University of Ohio State. Cameron, let me ask you. You know, this class, and I'm sure you guys all know this, is very, very deep in the defensive line. There's you know, a lot of talent there, a lot of guys projected to go in the first round. How do you distinguish yourself among such a deep class of defensive linemen? Mentioned, you know, you see these other guys and everything, you know, whether it be at the combine, whether it be working out in Arizona there at API, do you kind of feel that there's more of a competition among you guys, or do you to some extent kind of root for each other and have a camaraderie as defensive linemen? Do you guys want to maybe go down, not necessarily competing against each other, but maybe go down as one of the top defensive line classes ever? And I'm sure you guys commiserate about how often you get held as well, right?
That's the part of the game.
All right, and that was defensive lineman Cameron Hayward from the University of Ohio State. You can hear that in its entirety tomorrow when we air that as a player spotlight. And keep a lookout for more player spotlights as the weeks come leading up to the NFL draft. Rev, quickly, before we do wrap it up, talk to us a little bit about, you know, the different fits. We talked a lot about the key players, and with so many teams still transitioning to that 3-4 defense, still looking to fit guys, give me the top couple of guys there that are the best fits for a 3-4 defensive end as well as a 3-4 nose tackle.
Well, as far as 3-4 defensive end, five technique guys go, I think J.J. Watt is an ideal guy, a big, long athlete, and collapses the pocket. He doesn't use his hands in a sudden or violent manner like Cam Jordan does, but that's why I think he's more of a 3-4 guy. He's not going to be the type of guy that's going to get you 10 sacks every season, but he's going to be a terror versus the run, and he's got those long arms. He could bat down a lot of passes. I could definitely see him excelling in that type of scheme. Marcel Darius, I think, is also a guy that could be a 3-4 end as well. Fit man, explosive guy, could do a lot of different things. Cameron Hayward is a guy that you just talked to before, a guy who is very large, very strong, excellent lateral quickness to go along with the wide base, the long torso. He's got the thick legs, and he's very quick off the snap and very agile. You're not going to move this guy out of the way. He just doesn't have a lot of pass rush moves. He's not that type of player. That's why I think he's more of a 3-4 guy.
Yeah, you know, definitely guys there that could fit. And it's interesting, too, because most of these guys can play either scheme. They're not just limited to being that. And obviously Taylor is the one legit real nose tackle that could be kind of a high pick. Who else do you have there in terms of the nose tackles. You know, for you know, if you're not going to pluck a guy in the first round, if you don't get Taylor, who else could be a fit as a nose tackle?
Well, obviously, you mentioned one guy, Jarvis Jenkins. I think that, you know, if he puts on a few pounds, he can definitely do that. Another guy is Ian Williams out of Notre Dame. 6'1", 311 pounds. He's a typical, classic wide body. Shows great instincts, great awareness, maintains a low base, has quick, strong hands to shed blockers. The only thing about him is he's got average range. Getting from side to side, he doesn't really excel in that. He's not as quick as, you know, a guy like Phil Taylor maybe, and that's why he's going to fall down a little bit lower in the draft. But I think he's a prototypical classic nose tackle. I think if you run that 3-4 scheme, Ian Williams can step in and do the job from day one.
And a couple other guys, Rev, how about, you know, Kendrick Ellis or a Poe out of Ole Miss, who's another big kid. I think Ellis is a kid to me that I like as a sleeper type prospect, a lot of, you know, raw ability, and, you know, what is he, you know, 330, 340, so he definitely gives you the size you're looking for at that nose tackle position.
Yeah, I actually was going to mention Ellis as one of my sleepers, but yeah, 6'5", 339 pounds, he's just a bear out there, sheds blocks with ease, sends shivers down the spines of blockers with a devastating hand punch, has the agility to chase guys 10 yards down the field. You know, and I've even seen him drop back on occasion, if that's, you know, even believable, you know, with a guy that big. So to me, Kendrick Ellis, there are some questions in terms of his character and his attitude. Is he going to stay motivated? You know, that's why the guy ended up going to Hampton, and that's why, you know, he's not playing for a team like Ohio State. But, I mean, the guy's got all the skill, all the potential, and he's a definite sleeper.
Ooh, shivers down the spine. That's what he sends. That's the kind of guy I want at nose tackle. Rev, a couple more names. Let me throw them at you in terms of potential defensive ends, maybe not guys that are going to go that high in the draft. You know, one I know you're very familiar with, and that's Christian Ballard from University of Iowa. He played both inside and outside for the Hawkeyes, and that's kind of, you know, the mold to some extent, where you're that kind of tweener in a 4-3, you might be the prototypical 3-4 type end.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I think he is more of a tweener. I think he's more of a rotational guy, but a guy that, you know, in spurts, he can make plays for you. I like him. He's got a great first step, a lot of good quickness out there, can shed blocks, can be a pass rusher as well. I think that he's a definite sleeper.
I think Brandon Bear out of Oregon is another player that, you know, is he a D-end? Is he a D-tackle? What position is he? That might be a better fit for a 3-4 defensive end, that 5 technique position.
Yeah, he looks a lot like a J.J. Watt, same type of body type.
Right, you know, stout guy. Maybe he's not going to be that big sack guy, but, you know, plays that 5 technique, plays the run well, and allows your outside linebackers to do what they have to do in terms of getting into the backfield. And I think a couple intriguing guys, too. Lawrence Guy out of Arizona State. You know, he's another player that I think would have been wise heading back to school. But, you know, has pretty good length. I think maybe a switch to D-tackle to D-end might be a good fit for him. And in the later rounds, a kid like a DeMarcus Dobbs out of Georgia, a defensive tackle, he got some experience playing 3-4 defense last year for the Bulldogs. They transitioned to that defense in 2010. So he's got experience playing both in a 4-3 and a 3-4. And a guy, you know, sometimes maybe they're just a better fit in the 3-4. We thought Guy was a player that could have a breakout season. Maybe he'll find his breakout in the NFL as a 3-4 end. You know, you need not only the bulk, but you do need a little more length when you're playing that defensive end position. And Guy's got it a little over 6'4".
Yeah, and a couple of other sleepers that I like out there. Clay Nurse out of Illinois, and that's why I asked about him in the interview. I just love this guy. He's got a lethal first step. He can close in on the quarterback in the blink of an eye. He's a little bit raw, especially versus the run, but I think he has the raw tools and the athletic skills that you can work with and develop. You saw in that Texas versus the Nation, he just dominated at the end of that game. Just too quick for blockers out there. I think he's a guy that maybe could be a pass rush specialist. The other guy that I like also, and nobody's talking about, and I think you could get him in the late rounds, is Cliff Matthews out of South Carolina. Now, what stands out about him, he's got a remarkable wingspan, the longest arms you'll ever see. He's good at maintaining leverage. He plays at about 200 miles per hour, big motor, big effort guy, has good range and recognition skills, and he's a very good kid off the field. No character concerns there. The problem with him is that he's going to have to bulk up a little bit if he's going to play that defensive end position. He's about 268 pounds right now, but I think that this is a kid you can work with.
You know, it's interesting, too. Even Corey Legit, the kid we spoke to not too long ago, you know, he's not the prototypical nose tackle, but he has played some nose in college. He does have that experience, you know, not often, but he's played some. And then, you know, you factor in what type of team you're going to. You know, when I spoke to John McClain, who covers the Houston Texans, and he brought up Wade Phillips bringing that 3-4 defense, the one that Dallas plays, they don't always look for that 330-pound, you know, big plugger defensive end. You know, they look for the quicker guy. You know, they have a Pro Bowl player who's just about 300 pounds. He's not a 330-pounder. They look for more of that from their nose tackle. So, you know, a team like a Houston who could be looking to add a nose tackle, they might not necessarily want that prototypical guy. They may want a more traditional defensive tackle type who just can handle the ability of playing over center but has more quickness, not just girth.
Yeah, one team's prince is another team's pauper. It's all about, you know, fitting in and then developing the guy once he's there. But, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Corey Legit, the one thing you don't have to worry about him is that, you know, he's not a guy that, as you said, he hasn't played nose tackle. He actually was a lot heavier at one point. So you don't have to worry about, you know, his size. I've seen, you know, some experts out there saying that he might not be big enough to play inside. Well, there's a guy who actually lost weight, so that was a little erroneous, that type of observation right there. So I don't have any concerns about him, you know, playing in any type of scheme because he has proven that he could play both at 300 pounds and at 325 or 330.
All right, Rev, thanks a lot for joining me here in studio as we break down the defensive line for the 2011 NFL Draft. We're talking about maybe up to 13 guys could go in the first round from this position. So many teams have a need. It's one of the spots we could see a run once we hit the teens on defensive ends in particular. Thanks for joining us today on the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Show. We will be back here same time, same channel, Thursday, 5 o'clock. We'll be talking defensive backs on Thursday. Also keep a lookout for our linebacker show that we're going to do sometime early next week, as well as our On the Clocks Monday through Thursday. Check out the schedule. A lot of great shows coming up this week, and coming up next will be the Kansas City Chiefs in just about 20 minutes or so. Hopefully you'll join us then. If not, we'll talk to you again next Thursday at 5 o'clock with the Draft Digest Show.